Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, the caller number is 917-889-9592. Welcome back to the Coffee for Cafe. The kitchen is back open. Me and my big brother back at it. Welcoming in our TZ, a.k.a. Mr. King. The cafe is open. How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, I'm feeling good this morning, Timeless. Excited to be back inside Sports City doing what we do here, man, the Crossover Cafe. It's been a long time. I know a lot has been going on in our lives. A lot's been happening in the NBA. There's a lot to catch up on and discuss. So I'm excited about it.
Okay, so we are going to jump into it as we have 13 hours left into the year of 2016. And by my personal standards, come on, 13 hours. I want to see what 2017 looks like. I want to see what 2015 looks like. But as of now, we have, what, at least 2 months of play in the NBA. We're going to talk and discuss a lot of what has gone on up until this point, from Eastern Conference to Western Conference, the teams, things of that nature. Definitely going to get involved in a lot of these topics. Rafe, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to talk about something that happened last night and see about your thoughts and the events that took place. First and foremost, point guard of the Boston Celtics, Isaiah Thomas, and not Zeke from Detroit. No, we're talking about the short guy from Washington, the Husky himself, goes off with 52 points last night. Your thoughts for Isaiah going off, one of a few members of the Boston Celtics history to go off for 50 in a basketball game.
Well, you know, first thing I'm going to say, Timeless, is how do the Sacramento Kings feel right about now? It may seem like I'm going a slight bit off topic, but you just pointed out Isaiah Thomas, Washington Husky, the final pick, I believe it was in the 2011 NBA draft, taken by the Sacramento Kings, who right now are void of a starting NBA point guard because the play of Ty Lawson and Darren Collison is not getting it done. The Phoenix Suns, they have a nice player. A very good player when healthy in Eric Bledsoe, but his health is up and down. You give up Goran Dragic, you gamble on Brandon Knight. Brings me to Isaiah Thomas. Had two previous stops before arriving in Boston. Boston wanted Isaiah Thomas. They are getting the best of Isaiah Thomas because they appreciate that great things sometimes come in small packages, Timeless. Isaiah Thomas, absolutely outstanding and phenomenal last night in his performance. I love what he's doing with his game. I love the fact that he's relentless in terms of his efforts to compete on both ends. He might not be one of the elite on-ball defenders in the NBA, you know, at his position, partly due to his size, but you cannot deny his effort and his fight as a player to play team basketball and make individual sacrifices because he's a part of a winning organization, despite the fact that they haven't won a championship in a few seasons, but they are competing at a very high level, and I thought it was awesome what Thomas did last night.
And the crazy part about it is, they needed every last bit of those 52 points in knocking off the Miami Heat. Now, here goes the interesting situation because I want to talk about surprise players. surprise teams and things of that nature. Now, here's one team that I want to talk about being a surprise to me in the Miami Heat. Now, earlier in the season, we started talking about, I remember me, you, and Danelle were talking about teams in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference on how things would suit out for a lot of these teams to be pegged to either be in the top eight or bottom eight. Some people said Miami would actually be in the top eight. They are bottom feeding bottom eight. 10-24 in the season, 5-12 away from home. They are 5-12 at home. They can't do anything wherever they are, whether they're in South Beach or they're on the road getting out there. Now, I know I can't even, like, under-talk the loss of Dwayne Wade leaving there or watching LeBron James leaving there as well. But Spoelstra was one of the coaches that people highly praised while he had the run of having Bosh there, having Wade there, having LeBron there. These three guys leave, I mean, one through health reasons. One wanted to go back home, but actually both of them ended up going back home being Wade and LeBron James. Is this a surprise to you with Miami? I mean, your thoughts on if they can actually get onto a winning spurt? I don't even want to say a streak because this will be hard, especially with the turn of the new year coming around. Your thoughts on this Miami Heat team where they really don't have a true identity at all?
Well, Thomas, you know the latest on the Royce report when it comes to the Miami Heat. It's not a surprise to me. I've said it at the beginning of the season. Look, let's recount the history really quickly. With LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, four straight trips to the NBA Finals, okay? Two NBA championships. You have a season, there's a departure of LeBron James, the centerpiece in which that championship team, we'll call them somewhat of a dynasty, was built. Follow that up with the departure of arguably your best player in franchise history that you drafted in terms of Dwayne Wade goes to Chicago on the heels of Chris Bosh basically career being cut short due to health. Now he tried to play last season. He got off to a good start. Obviously, again, his season cut short due to health. Now, you go into training camp, and it's so serious. As an organization, you have to put Chris Bosh's health before the team. Basketball is still just a game, and his value to his wife and his children is greater than basketball. That being said, the writing was already on the wall. All the superstars are gone. Finding and signing Hassan Whiteside, great. You know, NBA business move by Pat Riley and Arison there down in Miami, but still not enough talent. There's a development period for Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Goran Dragic. He's had a couple of good seasons prior to arriving in Miami. However, you know, take a good look at his player card. I think when this man got to Miami, he may have already been 30 or 31. So he's near the end of his NBA prime, if you will. So without Chris Bosh, without Dwayne Wade in tow in terms of leadership that can still actually go out and perform and get it done at a high level, you're void. So it's rebuild mode right now. That's what's happening in Miami. So, you know, if you're a Miami Heat fan, all is not lost. You have very nice pieces, again, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Hassan Whiteside. That's the new core trio, in my opinion, to build around. I'm not really sold on Tyler Johnson. When Miami matched the offer sheet from the Brooklyn Nets, he does have potential, and I do see that, but I'm not quite convinced just yet that he could be part of the core in terms of franchise changing and getting them back to a championship-caliber team there in Miami, Thomas. So not surprised at all at where they are in the standings in the Eastern Conference.
Now, if this continues, and let's just say, okay, so out of 34 games, they've won 10. Let's just say they finish 30-52. Let's just do that. Does Spoelstra keep this job, or do they move on from the video guy that turned into bringing two championships to South Beach?
No. I don't feel like, look, Spoelstra's job is not in jeopardy. If Pat Riley refused to ever come down and take over for Spo when he had the big three. There's no way he's going to bail on Spoelstra now. Okay? I feel like Spoelstra's job is should be one of the safest jobs in the NBA right now. His track record is proven, and the reality of the league and the landscape, it's set. In my opinion, it's quite obvious. Not enough talent, not enough experience, and they've been dealing with some health issues, okay? So they're not the healthiest team either right now. So why would I fire Eric Spoelstra when he knows what it is that we're doing here in Miami and bringing someone brand new, which will further delay our return to any type of, you know, truly competitive level for championships? That would be a major, major mistake. And Pat Riley is just not that guy. Pat is very solid. And with the new CBA that, you know, was put into place, Thomas, Pat Riley has pretty much gone on record and said, hey, we are in transition. We are in immediate rebuild mode right now, but it's not going to take them very long. So, if I'm a part of Heat Nation, I trust Pat Riley to figure it out and work it out and find a way to rebuild this team as quickly as possible.
Okay. I don't know. I do agree with you on what you said, that there's a lack of talent there, and that could be the situation. Well, to me, that is the situation that's going on in South Beach. If they can intrigue players to come there and try to turn this thing around, and then he doesn't have that legit season or have them 500 or better, then I can actually throw that out there and say that they could actually be looking to question his abilities as the head coach. But we'll see if they can get talent back down there. But it would be hard to fill shoes of championship-caliber players of Bosh, Wade, and James. So I just wanted to entice that, throw that one out there. Now, here goes another, I don't even want to say shortcoming or long-term coming, however we want to do that. But I do give Royce a ton of credit on calling this storm of the Houston Rockets. Now, mind you, before I jump into what happened last night, right, people? Blake Griffin is out with an injury. Chris Paul is out with an injury. So I'm going to start there. Just to give some leeway to where I'm about to go with this one, people. The Houston Rockets, in a four-quarter game, scored 140 points in a game. Every quarter, they averaged over 31 points a quarter. Every quarter. The lowest total was 32, and that was the fourth quarter where they said, let's take our foot off of the gas. James Harden finishes with a triple-double, 30 points, 13 rebounds, and 10 assists, and a night where everybody was on target, making this thing go down. Now, mind you, they played the Clippers. The Clippers on the road, dealing with injury. The Clippers put up 116 points, in which both of the Rivers got ejected, being Dr. Father, and Austin got ejected as well in this game. But that's besides the point. The Rockets are clicking, having a 25-9 season up until this point. Royce, like I said, you called this earlier. The Rockets are putting together a pretty good storm right now. Your thoughts on them at least over 31 points a quarter and finishing with 140 in a four-quarter game. No overtime included. No overtime included. That's a basketball total for an overtime game. What's your thoughts?
Well, this is what Mike D'Antoni's system is all about. It's about offense, okay? Basketball, very simple in my eyes, Timeless. The team with the most points wins. I'm not saying I don't value defense. I'm not saying defense doesn't matter or it isn't important. I'm just stating the very, very obvious. The team with the most points wins. The best way to ensure you have the most points is be the team that puts the ball through the rim. I'm talking about the top down to the bottom, not from the bottom up, okay? So, look, everybody for the most part was on fire. Six guys in double figures. James Harden. Can we talk about James Harden for a moment, Timeless? I mean, outstanding basketball player for the last couple of seasons. Catches so much flack for his defensive ability or liability, but it's because he's been doing so much on the offensive end. We all remember James Harden when he was in Oklahoma City. He was a pretty good defender, okay, when that was his role. New team, new role. So people have new things to talk about in terms of trying to bring you down. The reality is James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, a better basketball match made in basketball heaven than even, dare I say, Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni. Okay? That's how great a player James Harden is, and that's how great of a fit Mike D'Antoni's system is for James Harden to go out and be so effective, so dominant, and put his imprint on every game. And I could see it brewing, the storm brewing. I could see it coming, Timeless. And I said it, they would arguably be the top four, if not in the West. Now, due to injury, the Clippers have obviously slowed down, missing games from Blake. They've missed games from Chris Paul. But we're not here to throw anyone under the bus. We're not here to really, you know, bring down or criticize the Clippers. We're just going to take a moment and talk about how good the Houston Rockets actually have been. Can we even talk about the reemergence of Eric Gordon? Happy, healthy. It all matters, ladies and gentlemen. It's important to a player's on-court performance. No one's talking about Eric Gordon shooting at a Steph Curry clip the past two seasons. This guy is making almost four threes a game, okay? Playing very good as well in D'Antoni's system. On the ball, off the ball. Happy players. It's like happy wife, happy life. That's what it is. You're happy with your coach. You're happy with the system. Guys go out and perform. No one's talking about Harden's leadership abilities. No one's discussing whether or not guys are getting along or not getting along in the locker room. Who knows? It doesn't matter. They are winning, winning, winning. And that was very, very impressive to be able to go out and drop 140 on the Clippers, okay? I mean, they still got some guys there in terms of some talent. Again, they didn't have a full clip. They weren't at full strength. But games have to be played. Someone has to get hot and make shots. That's what happened with Houston last night. Guys got hot. They made shots. They got a full complement of participants in terms of their abilities to make shots and put the ball in the hole. So shout out to the Houston Rockets. I expect them to continue to roll along this season and be the talk of the postseason conversation. I think they're going to surprise some fans, Timeless.
Oh, well, if they listen in here, they won't be surprised. They will not be surprised if it's talking about here. Crazy point about it, if they can continue to score at a clip of, let's just say, 28 to 30 points a quarter, it's going to be very hard to beat them. Even though the name of the game is, you know, who scores more than who. And Houston, they are long. They do have a lot of length throughout the floor. And have some pesky point guards as well to, you know, frustrate ball controllers or point guards that are bringing the ball up. But they do have length. James Harden is actually surrounded, so that's actually good on the defensive side of the ball. It actually helps him orchestrate a better game plan as they move forward. But if they can continue to score near 30 points a quarter, it's going to be very hard for teams to beat them, let alone everyone that is on the floor for them. Everyone that comes on the floor for the Houston Rockets has confidence to shoot the three ball. These guys have actually shot and made three-point field goals more than anybody in some of these games. They hit 24 in a game, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, they are shooting at an enormous clip, and this is actually helping D'Antoni become a relevant coach again, because I'm not going to lie, I was one of the guys that was against him. I always talked about him on how he did not preach defense, especially while he had his little term in New York and his term in Phoenix as well. As much as they raised eyebrows, especially while he was in New York, because they didn't win games while they were actually scoring like that. Now he's winning games. He has a core that can get it done. So it's going to be tough for teams in the Western Conference, let alone across the league, not even just the Western Conference, to deal with the Houston Rockets. One other name that I do want to mention that it still hurts me that the team that I like, follow, and love overlooked them is Sam Dekker. Sam Dekker has been phenomenal in his first season of play, because last year he didn't play. He didn't play last year. So this year right now he's out there and he's comfortable already. He's comfortable already. He fits right in with this team also. So I give Decker a ton of credit on what's going on with this Houston Rockets team too. But Trevor Ariza stepped up as well, and Montrezl Harrell was also put. He put up an enormous game last night. Also, that was a huge game for Montrezl with over 20 points worth of an effort in a winning fashion over this Los Angeles Clippers team. Okay. Another surprise team that I do want to jump into, and this is an unfortunate situation because they were playing a buzzsaw of a team in the San Antonio Spurs, and this is the Portland Trail Blazers. The Trail Blazers ended up losing in Texas to the Spurs 110-94, in which C.J. McCollum led this team at 29 points in scoring. Now, here's what I want to say about the Portland Trail Blazers. Now, this was a team that we actually spoke on in the kitchen before the season started on one of the teams that should be able to be in the top eight in the playoff form. And right now, it's only 2 months of play, but after 35 games of play, they are 7 games under .500. Can they get warm as the winter starts up? And, Royce, I'll come right back to you. This is a guy that you woke me up to. Even though I watched him play while he was in college in that tournament run that he had, but coming into the league, the confidence that you showed it to him woke me up as soon as his rookie season moved on until now at Damian Lillard. Can Lillard warm this? Well, I don't even think it's just him, because I'm just as much as a fan of C.J. McCollum as I am for Damian Lillard as well. So I'm going to just say this. Can this backcourt help push or carry this team back to .500 and becoming Western Conference playoff picture relevant? Let me say that correctly.
Well, I'm a believer that all things are possible, Timeless. But right now, look, this team has to figure out how all the pieces currently fit. It was very interesting offseason in Portland there, re-signing pretty much everyone who was up for a contract, and then going out and getting Evan Turner and not really giving Evan Turner the type of role in which he had just recently found, for the most part, his success in the league. As a rookie in Philadelphia, he struggled. Eventually was traded from there to Indiana, where he continued to struggle. He got to Boston. Brad Stevens created a role for Evan Turner in that second unit. He gave him the ball to play with, to make shots for himself and for others, and he thrived and gave himself value around the league. And here comes Portland, but they do not give him the exact same type of role, which is causing Evan Turner to struggle, which I think is part of the shortcomings of the Portland Trail Blazers as a team. When you look at what Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum are capable of, one of the best backcourts in the NBA, that's no question. So they are very capable, and they showed that last season, during the regular season and postseason. Mason Plumlee, look, capable passer, fairly decent rebounder, but he cannot really score. He doesn't have an offensive game. Al-Farouq Aminu doesn't really have an offensive game. He's capable of making some open shots. He brings a lot of energy and a lot of hustle to the floor. Ed Davis is all about energy, defensive rim protection, defensive rebounding. And then you have, for the most part, an uber-talented young man in Noah Vonleh. However, he really needs experience. He needs on-court pressure position experience, and he needs someone to help him develop further his basketball IQ. It's just the truth of the matter. But their best chance, in turning things around is they've got to get a lot more from their front court players in terms of point production. You just can't live and die with what with McCollum and Lillard. That is entirely too much. And their games are perimeter games, and when they go to the rim, these guys are slightly built, okay? And they can't take all that punishment and abuse season in and season out. You know, we only talk about the season that we're currently in each year, Timeless, but these NBA players are trying to have NBA careers. So one season follows another, which follows another, which follows another. So what I'm saying, I could be on fire this year. I could be putting up great numbers. I could play 82 games, but eventually the wear and tear, when you get to year four, year three, year five, whatever the case, however you want to count it, jump around. And man, look, guys struggle, okay? They struggle. Things change. Defenses catch up. Players get better. Coaches scheme better, okay? So right now they're struggling. They are not really where we may have projected them to be. Can they finish better? They can. But it has to begin with the front court, in my opinion. It has to begin with the front court. I expect Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to get theirs. But it's the others that really have to step up in Portland.
And I'm looking at this roster, and the names that you did mention, you know, do weigh or sway this situation. I don't know which player or two players helped turn this thing around for this Portland Trail Blazer team. Now, Royce, I don't know if you are standing up or sitting down, but this is the kitchen. I have to start a fire somewhere, one way or another, and I am not moving from this Portland Trailblazer team, in which, in the basketball media, the world today, there has been a notable name, guy, coach, and George Karl, that has spoken openly in a book that he has coming out about Carmelo Anthony and Kenyon Martin, right? In a book that's coming out soon. Now, recently, this week, he made a statement about the Portland Trailblazers, and I don't have it verbatim word for word, but he said Coach Stotts is a great coach and the Trailblazers are underachieving. This says a lot or a view of the player in Damian Lillard. Basically looking like he's putting this on the shoulders of Damian Lillard. Do you think this is right, wrong, or indifferent for George Karl to be the eyes on the outside looking in?
Well, look, I can't say he's right, wrong, or indifferent for having his opinion and making comments. That's what we do. Freedom of speech is so very important. So, look, he can say what he wants to say. However, if you want to have credibility, well, you know, make the points, be accurate, be objective, and don't just say something for the sake of selling your book, George. That's kind of how I see it. Don't just say it for the sake of saying it. But when it comes to his comments, look, Stotts is a very good coach. Damian Lillard is a very good player. Now, depend on perspective of the statements and in the context and tone in which these things were said, and I don't know. I didn't hear it. I haven't read the book. Damian Lillard has a lot of responsibility. He is the franchise player. So his responsibility is, one, do what he does. He works very hard. He works to improve his game and to get better every season. To me, that's not in question. At least I'm not calling that into question. And then he has to go out and assist in making his teammates better, okay? At the same time, you can only play the cards or the hand that has been dealt to you. And I just share my view and my opinion in terms of that roster, in terms of some of the players on that team, the talent, what they're capable of, and what you can expect from them. And again, when he's looking to give that ball up, there's not a lot of guys who could fill up the basket at a high level. Okay, he doesn't have a lot of options. So they have to run the type of stuff, actions that get easy baskets for guys who really need to be, you know, 6 feet and in to be very, you know, effective and efficient. So that being said, there's always work that needs to be done with a franchise. That's why, you know, it's everybody collectively involved in the championship. That's why so many people get rings, not just the players and the coaches, but the general manager, the president, you know, people who are vitally involved in the organization's success. So I think there's some things that have to be done. I would not be surprised if there's going to be movement, if not at, before the trade deadline in the off season. Because right now, if you really look around the NBA, most people do their business in terms of willing and dealing and making trades in the off season. That's the type of NBA we're in right now. There's going to be changes in Portland after the type of money that they spent in signing Evan Turner and bringing back Alan Crabb and bringing over Festus Ezeli, which hasn't worked out due to injury. You know, there's going to be changes in Portland, but for right now, you gotta roll with what you created. You gotta deal with it and hope for the best. Look, I would just say get your young front court player, your uber talented young front court player, live and die with his mistakes. I think it's time to get Noah Vonleh 30 minutes a night and get him involved, you know, where you're running offensive plays for him. You know, figure out what it looks like to, let's say, high dosage usage of Lillard, McCollum, Vonleh, and Plumlee. Let's see what that looks like. Let's see what that looks like and coach him up. Coach him up on the defensive end, because sometimes he looks a little lost, like a deer in a headlight. But coach him up, develop, and then things might change sooner than later for the Portland Trail Blazers. But no, it's not on Damian Lillard to answer that portion if I didn't already.
Well, no. You went all around the board, and I want that. We cooking here, so this is the interesting part. What do you think George Karl is looking at when he's pointing the finger at Damian Lillard? Do you think it's more of him wanting to distribute? Because, to be honest, it's a situation where that offense, just like you alluded to, they don't really have supreme offensive caliber outside of the two guards that we mentioned. And a lot of the time when that shot clock is running down, in which I was in Portland myself, for my birthday weekend and watch it go down, watching McCollum and Damian Lillard take the shot at the end of the clock. Is that a situation where it's always on the shoulders of them to knock down a shot late? Is it more or less he wants to work the ball around, or want to see the ball worked around and let everybody be able to shoot the ball? Or is this just the makeup of this team where they need these guards to score and everybody, you know, kind of play their role similar to Allen Iverson in the Sixers in the early, the late 90s and the early 2000s?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, look, you know, basketball is a game that as much as it's routine or repetitive, it's got moving parts, and it varies from day to day, from matchup to matchup. You never know what guy is hot. You never know what guy is going to show up one night and have a career night. So it's about adjusting on the fly, in-game adjustment. So players, the coaches, you know, they've got to read what's in front of them and react to that and make decisions, make the best possible decision in the moment. Now, it's always going to be easy for all of us who are sitting on the sidelines or watching from home to call into question the decisions of others. That's what we do as a people. That's what we do as fans, as media, or whatever the case may be. I don't have an issue for that. With that, all I would say is let's try to have a little understanding. Let's try to imagine ourselves in these situations when we're discussing it, and hopefully people, you know, understand the game, have played the game. And, you know, look, sometimes coaches make moves and they make decisions. And, yes, you could say, well, that coach, you know, must have been rattled, because that might not have been the best choice or the best option. So, you know, look, it's basketball. There's going to be some questions. But when it comes to Lillard and McCollum right now, again, as I stated, they're your best players. Those are the guys you want to put the ball in their hands to knock down shots. Defenses know those are the guys you want to get the ball to make late-game heroic plays. So the others have to continue to develop, so then you can begin to put in some decoy-type play situations where, okay, I know everyone expects Dame to get the ball, and we're going to run some action where we mislead the defense to think that Dame's getting it, but we draw something up for Allen Crabb. We draw something up, you know, for Evan Turner or Aminu or Mason Plumlee or Vonleh or somebody. But, again, the others have to be capable. They have to have the confidence of their teammates and the coaching staff. So, you know, again, everything works together.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to get your opinion on this. I'm not going to lie. I'm on Sports City. I'm in the kitchen. I'm going to say how I feel. And it hurts me to go this route, but I have to, because George Karl actually helped the team that I love respect in the Seattle Supersonics, which are now the Oklahoma City Thunder, to an NBA final, which they ran into a guy named Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, and the list goes on how those unforgettable Bulls in their 72-win-10-loss season, we actually got two wins in that series, but George Karl was the coach of that team. George Karl, it bothers me that I have to go this route and speaking in context towards you, but you are not a coach in the league right now in making a book, just like Roy said, to help sell it, to speak on Carmelo and Kenyon Martin, which Kenyon Martin isn't even in the league anymore. I guess to help this book be relevant. And now, after the book is published, or I don't know the expected date of when they actually are going to start selling the book, you come out with a statement just this week about Damian Lillard. I mean, the timing of everything with your name revolved around it, it's kind of like the perfect storm for this thing to sell for you. But I'm not buying it, and I'm not buying that book, because you are basically being the Excalibur to a lot of people's names to your expense, or to make you look better in the limelight. And I'm not buying it. That George Karl, that's terrible. That you are this type of individual where myself on this network basically poured out a ton of emotion because you were out there, and you probably still are, fighting cancer. Felt some type of way, and now you're beating up on these players, individuals. It's ridiculous. Picture if people started talking junk about you. Okay, let me get away from it. Let me get away from it. Royce, I'm going to take one of these to the backyard of where you are, and I want to speak in context of both of these teams that had a game last night in the Indiana Pacers, winning a game by 10 up against the Chicago Bulls. Both of these teams are, you know, swimming around the 500 mark. I'll let you start where you want, whether you want to start with the Pacers first or save them for last because they are in your backyard, or the Chicago Bulls with their issues with a guy that we know so well in Rajon Rondo. And they actually benched him the entire second half. He's already having another issue in which Fred Hoiberg came out and said his attitude was in question. That's why I benched him for the entire second half. Is this a situation where they're going to end up moving him again? If he ends up moved again, what team puts up with him or can actually adjust their situation around him? Or could this be close to seeing the end of a short career in Rajon Rondo's, you know, NBA career?
Well, let's stay right there in Chicago. And it's very, very astute of you to say what you just said about Rondo, because that's exactly what I was thinking. It's exactly what I'm feeling. That is the Royce report on Rajon Rondo. His days are numbered in the league simply because, you know, Rondo is a very strong personality. I like Rondo. He's a very intelligent man. He has a strong will to see things done his way. Because, again, he's a thinker. He sees things. He knows the game. He knows his position, okay? And he knows how to play the game of basketball. When it comes to his skill set, we're at a time where point guards put the ball in the hole at a high level. And Rajon Rondo is not the only point guard running around the NBA who's struggling despite the fact that, you know, he's kind of cut from that cloth of the old school pure point guards who pass first. Ricky Rubio is struggling. They have similar games. These are guys that can make any and every pass. They defend at a high level. They can get 2 to 3 steals on any given night. They can get about 4 to 5 rebounds on any given night. They rebound at a very high level for their position. But Rondo's struggles in Chicago have been forecasted by many. This was one of those things where any and everybody with a pair of eyes and been watching basketball for at least the last 3 to 4 seasons could see Rondo would struggle in Chicago with the personality of Hoiberg, who's a little bit more of a laid-back guy. At least he up to be such on the surface. On the outside looking in, Jimmy Butler had a little bit of a run-in and said that he needed Hoiberg to be a little bit tougher, you know, a little more Tibbs-like in terms of, you know, calling the shots, calling it the way you wanted to be, and setting things straight, you know, getting guys in check. Again, Rondo, a very strong personality, very difficult to get in check. So here we are. Who wants to put up with it? No one wants to put up with it. No young team wants to bring in Rondo. No young team wants to bring in Rondo. Championship teams don't want to bring in Rondo because, again, it's such a transition. You know what I'm saying? The good doesn't outweigh the bad, unfortunately, in terms of the exchange and what it could mean in the locker room, on the court, and how it could impact coming seasons, not just one season, but the upcoming season. So with that being said, I think if Rondo isn't traded and if he's able to stay in Chicago and finish out this season, I mean, for the most part, this will be his one and only season in Chicago. And I would love to see Rajon Rondo take his talents to the collegiate level. Or if he wants to stay in the NBA, get on a coaching staff. Because I think that there are organizations and coaching staffs that would love the views and points of Rajon Rondo on their side in the development of someone else, their future point guard or two. You see what I'm saying? That he's young, right. He has talent, but he doesn't see what Rondo sees. And if Rondo could temper, you know, what he has to say with patience, then I think he's a guy that we could be talking about in the next 10 years or so in terms of how he transitioned to the sidelines or to a front office position and has impacted the career and lives of this new NBA.
Now, we do have a caller in queue, and I'm going to get him in here. Now, you're already giving him the coaching vacancy, like already making him a coach somewhere, not saying head coach, but a coach somewhere, assistant, you know, like the likes of a Sam Cassell or something like that. And I've seen a special on Sam Cassell, so I had to throw Sam's name out there. I had to. Shout out to Sam Cassell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to – I'm going to look at this personally. I'm doing this different now. I'm tired of running away from not putting my teams or things that I like involved in the kitchen. I have to throw this in the pot. I have to. The Thunder need a backup point guard. They need a backup point guard. I can care less on how people feel about Samaje Christian, but he cannot score the ball. He's not confident at all on the offensive side of the ball, and he doesn't play good defense, in which I don't even feel like I'd be remiss in saying that's the same player that Rondo is, but at least Rondo has the experience and has actually been on a championship team. I don't want to say that he was the spoon that stirred it, but he's got a lot of things going on that Celtic team with Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and KG, and not to say that if he moved to the Thunder that he would help this team get there, but I think the balance of those two being on the floor at different times, being Russ coming in, coming out, and then Rondo doing his thing, it would be interesting. I don't know if it will work, but I know there are some teams that could use a guy of Rondo's caliber. It would be interesting to say, but I said at least I'm being personal with this one. They need a backup point guard, and it would be interesting to see if they did make the move, but I don't think the Bulls could actually move away from Rondo, especially with them on the roster at this current point in time. And they're swimming around 500 also. They are swimming around 500. Royce, I did want you to get to the Pacers, too. You didn't get to the Pacers yet because this is in your backyard. I want you to get there. I do have a caller in queue calling from the 602. Mr. Silva, welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening, this afternoon? Excuse me.
Good morning. out here in Arizona, but yeah, I'm feeling good. It's definitely a good day out here. It's cloudy. Right into the topic at hand. Hey, what's going on, brother? Is it get right into the topic at hand, man? It's really Rondo and I'll take to the Pacers after those. But the Rondo situation is really interesting. I got a couple questions for you guys that I might need to talk about. But, I have the same feeling as you guys do. With the talent level he has, with what his skill set is being a pass first point guard. And in this league, which I feel that position is dead. Pass first point guard, I don't see being able or being in this league anymore that people are looking for. To me, it just seems like that position, whether or not he had the issue personally or getting along with Coach, the way he plays the game, to me, is a dying breed that I don't think a lot of striving to get for. They don't want the pass first point guard. They want the guy that's going to support them, that can take it to the hole, do those things. And you know, if he can pass, add bonus. But to me, I feel that's one of the reasons why he won't get picked up by anyone. He's go worse in Chicago, but. Again, it just with the way that this league is turning out, I understand, I get the fact that it's hard to get along with the coach. To me, just so, like I said, it's repetitive, but the way he plays the game is really a dying breed. I don't see it very often anymore. We don't see him striving or hustling to make moves to get that guy. The Nashes and Jason Kidd going back, those guys are gone. But we don't have those in the league. You need to put up 20 or you need to be able to put up 25 points, 30 points at the point of our position. I believe I feel that's what most teams are looking for. But Ty hit it directly on the head. And again, I don't know how Rondo feels or how most guys who were stars in the league feel about role positions. Being a backup starter, being the guy who gets very little minutes and things of that nature, how he would adjust and if it would make his attitude, it would make him much harder to get along with. So, to me, Rondo is definitely, it's either Chicago or bust. If it goes any farther, than just benching where they do at least get rid of him or all in likelihood trade him away. I just don't see that happening. So this to me is Rondo's last ride, last stand as a player. And again, going to the coaching aspect, I know in football you've got, 22 positions or, a bunch of players, a lot of different coaches. I don't know how many coaches on the NBA level can play after this, where he could really fit in on without having that coach. Yeah, if you want to go to a helper, be a guide or something to that point where you're not a coach, maybe, but I just don't see him being able to go to a team, next year and coaching and help. College is something that you guys get on it. I really feel like that could be a place for him, getting into some young kids' heads. And again, when you have the track record he has, coaches to say, this is what you don't want to do. Look at him, pick up the great things he does and do those and better your game that way. I just don't see him sitting in a suit on a team next year at all. Maybe in college, but I don't see him suiting up for any year. fantastic job done for as well. Not only what he brings to the court, but his offset, the way he the way he handles himself, the way he presents himself, it doesn't.
Okay, well, here's the thing. One, I need you to turn that mic up. Whatever you're on, I need you to turn that up. It's low. Two, you and Rose are on the same page of seeing that. They don't think that actually, or you two think that he can't fit into another roster. He could actually go back to where it all started. He could go back to Boston as well. I think that'll actually be a team. He needs to be around a team where there's guns around him. And I don't think he could go to Golden State. I know Golden State is kind of set where they are, but they have, shooters all around the floor. Another team that will have that interesting type of setup would be San Antonio as well. I can't really throw the Hawks in there. The Hawks do have shooters around them, but I don't know if he can make that run-and-gun situation happen because he does. He can penetrate it and actually kick. That actually worked for him while he was in Massachusetts. So I still feel like there is capability for Rondo in the league. I don't know if now is the time that he hangs those sneakers up, but it is looking interesting now. He had an interesting spat while he was in Sacramento, an interesting spat while he was in Dallas, and him and Carlisle did not get along. Interesting spat in Chicago where him and Hoiberg are having attitude issues after 2 months with this team in play. From November till now, at the end of December, this is an issue for Rondo. And I feel bad because he has a championship under his belt. He should know what it takes. He came up around KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen. I mean, even though him and Ray Allen had their differences, I don't know how to sway it, but it's looking like everybody is kind of correct about Rondo. Now, offensively, this is what bothers me about a lot of players that have low percentages and field goal or free throw attempts, so on and so forth. They have shooting coaches, people. Every last one of these players are actually told to go to a shooting coach and find, finish their product or basically make themselves better. This is why I don't understand. Yes, you, Andre Roberson. Yes, you, Andre Drummond. Yes, you, Dwight Howard. Yes, you, Rajon Rondo. All of you guys are having problem shooting the ball one way or another on the floor or from the free throw line, wherever, from the field, however people paint this picture. And it's tough for teams while you guys are on there, but you're a professional basketball player at the end of the day. So I feel some type of way about this. I don't know if Chicago does move from him or not. I don't know if they want to go with MCW at this point in time, but it would be interesting. Royce, your thoughts on what has been said, and then I'll let you spill right into the team in your own backyard as well.
Yeah, well, look, there's nothing left to say about Rondo. Look, again, he's an older point guard. His best opportunity, NBA-wise, in my opinion, was to have remained in Sacramento. Again, they are a team void of true point guard leadership, being able to distribute. But it's the personalities. It's Rondo. It's an unhappy Rudy Gay. And then there's DeMarcus Cousins. And it was just too much probably for management to deal with because this is Dave Yorger's first year. He didn't have to deal with Rondo. But I'm sure right now he would love a point guard with the abilities of a Rajon Rondo. And they actually are in the playoff hunt right now. But it is what it is. The writing is on the wall. Is only a matter of time before it all comes to fruition at this point. Now, when it comes to the Indiana Pacers, Thomas, like I said, man, so many people at the beginning of the year was really excited about the acquisitions in the offseason, Al Jefferson, Thaddeus Young, Jeff Teague and everything. And look, what Teague has done recently, having a number of games where he's putting up double-doubles and points and assists, great for him, great for his career, great for the Indiana Pacers. But they're still gelling. They're still trying to figure it out as a team. So when you look at their record, obviously they have currently to this point underachieved. But there's hope for the future with the Pacers. So if you're a part of Pacer Nation, you got to be patient. You got to be patient. You got to continue to closely monitor the development of Miles Turner and see him grow. While at the same time, unfortunately, you got to continue to feed the ego of your team superstar in Paul George and live and die with his shot selection, which, in my opinion, some games is questionable. So you got to, you know, Paul George, I would say to you or your people who are listening, you know, on your behalf, you got to deal with the constructive criticism, you know, make your players around you better. I know, you expect to, carry the weight of the team on your shoulders, but it's a team. So, try to evenly distribute that. I thought it was a big-time play. What game was that? I think they were playing the Wizards, and it was Thad Young who hit the game winner. And look, scouting report, everybody knows he's left-handed. Scouting report obviously says make him go right. They let him go left. He gets it up high off the glass and hits the basket. Hey, look, it's better to be lucky than good sometimes. But it was good to see somebody else who's not really known as a closer in the game actually, put a win away for this Pacers team. So I think better days are ahead in terms of the season. I think they will improve in the standings the remainder of this regular season. And then let's see what happens in terms of postseason play. Let's see if Miles Turner can take another step. Let's see Jeff Teague take another step in terms of postseason performance, because I expect Paul George to lead from the front and not the back, okay? That's expected. So I want to see the other all-star, that being Jeff Teague, and the potential future all-star and Miles Turner take another step forward as far as this Indiana Pacers team.
Okay, another team that I want to jump to, and this is interesting, people, because of how the way that they look as constructed, I was going to say orchestrated, but as constructed, and the magician or the spoon that stirs this all in their head, coach, but it was a put-together situation out there in Minnesota, in which they had already had Andrew Wiggins, they already had LaVine, they get Cat, a.k.a. Carl Anthony Towns, if you guys don't know, and they get Coach Tibbs to run the show, in which these guys are under 500. They're still young, but still a team that you have to be concerned about on a night-by-night basis. They can come into your gym and get a win if they need to, but they only have 11 wins on the season. They picked up a win last night up against the Milwaukee Bucks, another team that's young and still trying to me, I can be wrong, I want Royce to give me his thoughts on this, trying to find their identity. Of course, Antetokounmpo is their guy, but I think they need more than just him and Jabari Parker to help get this done. They are under 500 by a game, swimming to try and get back relevant into the Eastern Conference. I think on a night-by-night basis, they're just as strong to get a win up against some of these teams in either conference, whether it's Eastern or Western Conference. But, Royce, your thoughts on both of these teams, wherever you'd like to start, whether in Minnesota or in Milwaukee.
Let's start with Minnesota. Folks, I guess we can all see it clearly now. You cannot take a losing team, organization, players who have done nothing at the NBA level but lose, and think that if you add Coach Thibodeau to the mix, you're instantly a top four or five seed in the Western Conference. Like, it's just not going to happen that way. It doesn't happen that way. These guys are still trying to learn how to play the NBA game, and more importantly, they're learning how to win. Win. They have to learn how to win close NBA games. Take, for example, Thomas, the Utah Jazz. They made an adjustment. They know what it was when they had veterans like Al Jefferson playing at a healthy and high level before he moved on. Same with Paul Millsap. They were competitive. They got a young Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward some playoff experience. You move out those veterans who can play and close out games, and you say, hey, young guys, go do it yourselves, and it's an epic fail. It's a collapse. It doesn't work. Enter this season. The Jazz at Boris Diaw, Joe Johnson, George Hill. Is it somebody I'm missing? But I know those three right now is popping to my mind. They have made a difference in that locker room and on-court play in terms of getting wins. That's why they're in the playoff picture right now. Now let's get back to the Minnesota Timberwolves. There is no veteran. Ricky Rubio's like 25 years old, but he hasn't won anything as it relates to the NBA. Wiggins, no wins. Karl Towns, Gorgie Jang, Zach LaVine, Shabazz Muhammad, Chris Dunn. Youth, potential, talent, upside, but they do not know how to win, and they do not yet know exactly how to play the NBA game night in and night out to overcome the experience of more veteran-savvy players and teams and schemes. So with that being said, plenty of opportunity and room to grow for the Minnesota Timberwolves. T-Wolf Nation, be patient. Don't rush it. It's going to come in time. It's just not right now. But enjoy the highlights and the growth and development of the players, because I love the Minnesota Timberwolves' young talent. I love watching them. I love their exploits and what they're capable of doing and what they put on in terms of a show when they do lace up. But they're still learning. So I'm patient with them, and I don't expect the ridiculous from them right now. But when it comes to the Milwaukee Bucks, Timeless, again, a team that's in a similar fashion, a similar situation. And can we, you know, look, let's acknowledge finally the brilliance basketball-wise in terms of a coach and making moves and decisions in Milwaukee that is embodied in Jason Kidd. Because, look, Jason Kidd did not have a point guard. He had Michael Carter Williams. He thought he had something. But he quickly found out that empty stats and Rookie of the Year awards playing for the Philadelphia 76ers do not mean to make you healthy, available, and a true, true top-tier point guard talent in the NBA. So what did he do? He looked in-house and realized that Giannis Antetokounmpo handled the ball a ton when playing over in Greece before he came to the NBA. So he said, you know what, I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to give you the ball, and you're going to run the show for us. And I don't care if we call you a point guard, a point forward, or a Ginsu knife. It doesn't matter. He is a basketball player with immense talent, immense length, an immense different maker. But we don't still know what this team is capable of in its entire package when healthy. Because let's go back a little in time, TP. Last season, or season before last, we had a heavy dose of Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. Jabari comes back last year. He's still, in my opinion, rehabbing, trying to get that knee right. He's healthy. He gets through the season, but it's not this season, that first full year after coming off the injury and rehab. So now this season, we see Giannis and Jabari, and we like what we see, the same way we like Giannis and Chris Middleton. But it's Chris Middleton who is out with the hamstring injury, right? So it's going to be imperative for the development of the Milwaukee Bucks. We've got to see next year, okay, a full complement of games from Giannis, Jabari, and Chris Middleton together. We've got to see what those three guys look like, what that core looks like together, what the schemes are together. And if they can maintain that, then you can start making a proper determination of, you know, well, where do we go shopping with Greg Monroe because he doesn't fit? What do we do with the developing Rashad Vaughn? Are we going to hold on to the this season's acquisition, Tony Snell and the rookie Malcolm Brogdon? Where do we play Thon Maker? How does he fit in the mix? Because he has immense talent, but he's young and he's raw, okay? But how does he fit in the mix? Okay, so there's a lot. It's another team like Minnesota. If you're a part of Bucks Nation, you have to be super excited about the talent on your roster, but these guys got to get on the court. They got to get on the court together and develop chemistry and get experience in close game situations and develop the IQ to overcome the veteran savvy laden teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors, which are the current gatekeepers in the East and the West.
Okay, and speaking of which, I want to pick up right there with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And an interesting call or non-call, shall I say, that was not made in the Christmas game. A lot of people still making up a storm of a situation on the NBA's two top teams. I can't even overlook the fact of Cleveland or Golden State, which both of them are making their respective noise in both respective conferences, in which yesterday the Golden State Warriors took care of business up against the Dallas Mavericks and winning by 9 at home, and Kevin Durant getting his first triple-double. But in that game on Christmas, Durant went off for 36 points and 15 rebounds, got the ball at the end of the game. His foot was stepped on by Richard Jefferson, a non-call, and the Cavaliers ended up winning that game, in which J.R. Smith is out due to injuries out for the next 3 to 4 months, if I'm not mistaken. And they still were able to pull this game out with Kyrie with a late-game heroic jump shot. Your thoughts on both of these teams in the direction that they're going? They both are still flying in the same height that they were last season, but Cleveland is still showing that they do have that edge on Golden State at this point in time.
Yeah, well, look, I'll start with Golden State. They're in transition, okay? They're in, you know, chemistry and development transition, a major overhaul in terms of the roster turnover. I think they lost like was between 7 and 9 bench players. That's huge when you're talking about chemistry and when you look at it in contrast to what they have been doing the previous two seasons and that well-oiled machine that was just flat out historic in wins, all right? But I get it. I get it. Anytime a team, an organization, has the opportunity to get the talent player like Kevin Durant, it's a move that you have to make if he wants to be there. So they made that move. But now they have to live with that decision. So, you know, it's a lot of patchwork going on when it comes to that bench. There's a lot of adjustment in terms of the chemistry, in terms of the starting unit and the talent that's on the floor together. I think they're starting to overpass a little bit. That's my opinion. I think there are some shots that are being passed up because this team is known for being unselfish. But sometimes we all know in basketball there are certain shots that in order for us to stay, you know, in a nice flow, right, you have to take. We've all been there where the coach yells at us and say, hey, you got to shoot the ball right there. It's better for you to shoot because everybody's in position to rebound. And sometimes I think they're passing up some shots that they should be taking, and it's actually probably affecting, if anyone, Steph Curry, more than others. So, look, I'm not worried about them, though. I mean, we could talk about, you know, what's going on or maybe not be happening. You know, look, what does everybody want? Would you really be happy if Golden State was completely undefeated right now? We wouldn't be happy. We wouldn't like that. We don't want that. So they're not winning every game, and they're showing that they have still some room to improve, and that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So, look, I still expect them to come out of the West. This brings us over to the Cavaliers. LeBron's rolling. Kyrie is rolling. Kevin Love. The Minnesota Timberwolves version of Kevin Love has finally arrived in Cleveland. He's figured out how he fits. Coach Lou has helped him figure it out. LeBron, Kyrie, the personnel, in terms of how they disperse the minutes. You know, some of the guys who are no longer on the team has kind of helped clear the way for, in my opinion, Kevin Love to get back to being the type of Kevin Love or the version that everyone kind of like fell in love with, was enamored with stat-wise in terms of the 20-12, 20-10 production. So he's having a great season in Cleveland. Again, they are the gatekeepers of the East. Toronto is on deck. They got next, but they need a trade.
They need a major trade or acquisition of a player who's capable of pushing the needle before they're a true threat. As long as Cleveland has LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love, and Toronto's only bringing to the table Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, you're short a difference maker. So, you know, with that being said, you know, Thomas, look, man, I will make this suggestion, and I'll be honest. I got this suggestion. I heard it first from Brian Scalabrine. So I'm going to put it out there again here on Inside Sports City and say, if the Toronto Raptors could figure out a way to get their hands on DeMarcus Cousins to run alongside Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, then we can say we got something special brewing in the East in terms of a fight for supremacy. All right? But if they're not getting the type of talent, you know, and I'm in a front court talent that can command attention the way DeMarcus Cousins does, they're, you know, the Raptors are easy out when it comes to Cleveland, because Cleveland, Kyrie's going to hold his own versus Lowry and DeRozan. Kyrie can handle those two. LeBron and K-Love dominate the front court that Toronto throws at them. Valanciunas has nothing. Patterson has nothing. The rookie, Pascal Siakam, and Bebe, Nagoria, like, there's nothing there. It's an easy win. So, you know, those are my thoughts, man. I hate to cut it short. It's been a pleasure to be back inside Sports City, rocking with you again, my brother. I gotta go. I got some moves that I do have to make. Just to say to everybody listening, look, you know, I'm still on Twitter. Hit me up at Royce Report. Going to be, you know, branching out, doing some other things. Just check with me on Twitter, man. You'll be able to hear me talk some other subject matters on Body and Soul Radio, being headlined by Ty Slatter. You might remember him as Legacy. He put together my theme song when I was doing my fantasy basketball stuff. So, Thomas, always good to rap with you, my brother. If I don't talk to you again before the clock strikes 12, Happy New Year to you, the family, and all the chefs at Sports City.
Definitely. And you and the King family, y'all stay safe out there in the streets in Indiana. We'll get back to it next week, Sports City. You already know how we get down. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs. The chefs will be back here tomorrow with the brunch, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
My own dad fertilized my mom. Peace to the gods. Hold it down for live niggas in the name of hip hop. offered another path for niggas that made the struggling stop. Oh, fuck that. I'm here to fight for mine, and that for your ass. If you want the government, try to do away with my cash. One of the most extraordinary that comes from a place where your man just stab you in the back and smile on your face. Take all them type of niggas off the face of the earth and do away with all them niggas before I get to them first. So slow it, niggas gon' get it and run right through it. Get with it to all of my niggas who know how to do it. Survival of the most fit for real niggas, no doubt. Get what's yours from out this fucker before your time run out. Get